Hello and welcome to the Powerful Prayers Podcast, where we will explore the meaning of the Siddur together and be inspired to more powerful prayers. In this third episode, we will focus on the prayers and some mitzvahs that are preparatory to the actual morning service. So last episode, we talked about Moda'ani, the prayer that's said upon arising in the morning. And we mentioned that what's unique about that prayer is that it does not have a direct mention of any of God's names, which allows it to be said immediately upon arising before the ritual washing of the hands. Subsequent, one should wash his hands. It's done three times on each hand in an alternating right, left. So three times on the right, three times on the left, alternating between the right and the left hands. And then our hands have been ritually cleaned and we can say God's names. We begin with a series of psukim, of verses, to inspire our action for the day. The first of these verses comes from Psalms, and we say that the beginning or the foundation of all wisdom is the fear of God. This is similar to the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, where King Solomon, wisest of all men, says that the end, after thinking and considering all sorts of pleasures, all sorts of wisdom, looking all around at the world, that the end of all is the main purpose of man in this world is reverence or awe for God. And so too, we begin our day by acknowledging that the beginning of all wisdom, the source of everything, comes from a fear, a reverence, an awe, or reverence of God. Subsequently, we say the verse Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, that Moses commanded us the Torah. And this verse is very important because it contains several of the most fundamental aspects of Judaism. Number one, that the Torah is from heaven. We received it from God at Sinai. Number two, the concept of prophecy, that God speaks to human beings directly. And number three, that Moses' prophecy was unique in him, in his role as the transmitter of the Torah. This is actually one of the first verses the Talmud tells us that a parent should teach to his child. As soon as the child begins to speak, he should teach him this verse. And the idea being that when the child becomes by rote accustomed to saying this verse, hopefully as they age, as they get older, they will think about it and say, well, what does this mean? And begin to ask, wonder, and that will open their mind to the Torah concepts contained within. One of the facets this verse says is that the Torah is a morasha, which is similar to the word yirusha, inheritance. But yirusha is inheritance that is passed down from father to son. Morasha is the act of handing over the inheritance. It's our charge to it's not just our privilege to receive this as an inheritance, but it's our charge to pass this inheritance down to future generations. Following immediately on that, the next verse said, is directed to the child, Shema Bini, listen, my child, to your father's message. Don't give up on your mother's instructions. Although metaphorically, father and mother in this sense refer to God and the Torah. Following, we say that the Torah is our strength, our belief and our strength, and through that we'll connect to God and be alive spiritually. And we end with our hope for future salvation, which, as we mentioned, is the end goal of the davening, to come to the end goal of the prayer service, to come to a realization or our request that the entire world, our prayer, that the entire world come to the realization of God, and that's our hope for the future. This concludes the prayers and verses which are said upon arising in the morning. Now, different Siddurim, different prayer books, have slight variations in the order of the next several prayers. For simplicity's sake and clarity, I'm going to use the version, the order of the complete Art Scroll Siddur. A link to that will be in the show notes. The next item in the Siddur is the putting on of the tzitzis. The tzitzis is a four-cornered garment worn by men, by Jewish men, during the daytime. So after arising, saying the prayers upon arising, the next order of the day would be putting on the tzitzis. That's why it's put in here. We will discuss tzitzis later with the Shema, but briefly, there's a commandment to wear on any four-cornered garment, garment that has four individual unique corners, where one should place tzitzis, which are fringes, strings, tassels, different words have been used for them, hanging off the corner of the garment. It is not required to wear a four-cornered garment, But if you are wearing a garment with four corners, you would be required to have tzitzis on them. The tzitzis are sort of like a small talus, and it's worn usually under the clothing. The idea being to have the concepts of the talus with us at all points throughout the day. The talus and that mitzvah of tzitzis represents the fact that a talus should be a form of clothing. The traditional talus is a large sheet of material which wraps around the entire body. It's a form of clothing. And clothes, the expression goes, clothes make the man. The idea being that we have also an animal body. We have animalistic urges, animalistic desires. Our body in some ways is similar, has same functions as animals. The difference with a human is that we have the mind which can control and sublimate. We have a mind which can direct our animalistic desires, which is represented by wearing clothing, covering our animalistic body, and leaving our head, our face, uncovered. Our head, the seat of our intellect, is uncovered. Our hands, which are the action, the human action of creating, building, making this world a better place, are uncovered. The rest of the body is kept modestly covered. That's the concept of clothing. Tzitzis are fringes that are added at the edge of the garment where the command for a person to be modest, to be human, ends. That's where Judaism begins and takes us further, asking of us to fulfill the mitzvahs, to have a higher calling. We have to go beyond the moral basic represented by clothing to extend that to have a higher calling of fulfilling the mitzvahs. So while the large talis is worn around the entire body openly during the prayer services, showing us that God wraps us, so to speak, in his embrace and protects us, the small talis, the tzitzis, are worn at all times during the day, and they're considered to be like a spiritual protection. They remind us, we'll discuss at another point, of all the mitzvahs of the Torah, and through that, they have a spiritual protection for us. In fact, there has been a tremendous demand for tzitzis in the Israeli army since the beginning of the Gaza War this past October, where the soldiers view tzitzis as a spiritual armor protecting them besides for their body armor. So we have the blessing that is recited upon donning the tzitzis, putting on the tzitzis in the morning. It's a mitzvah, so there's a blessing said for it, Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvotav. There's a specific mitzvah of putting on tzitzis. Then the next section of the Siddur talks about the talis, the big talis, which is worn during the prayers and the symbolism of it, some declaration of intent that we're planning on doing a mitzvah here, the blessing of the talis. Then we get to the tefillin. In English, they're called phylacteries, but the word is so uncommon that we might as well just use tefillin. Tefillin are a sign of kedusha, of holiness. They have to be made from only kosher animals. They signal our belief that our bodies are sanctified and are capable of reaching high levels of sanctity. We bind the tefillin to our arm, to our head with straps. We're tying ourselves through that to the will of Hashem. And we know that our bodies are holy, are special. We do many mitzvahs with our body. And even after death, Judaism believes that the body has to be treated with holiness and buried properly in the correct way. In the declaration of intent that is recited before putting on the tefillin, we talk about the fact that through binding the tefillin to our arms, to our heads, we're accepting and connecting to all the mitzvahs, and that we're binding our thoughts and our feelings to commit to following God, following Hashem, to doing what he wants. The end of the arm tefillin strap is wrapped around the middle finger, and a verse is recited comparing it to a betrothal ring, signifying the eternal connection of God and the Jewish people. One other point about the tefillin, both the hand tefillin and the head tefillin contain four sections from the Torah, two from the Shema and two others we'll discuss in a moment. The difference is that in the hand tefillin, they're in one large compartment. The head tefillin, they're split into four smaller compartments. Each section of Torah is placed in its own compartment. One of the symbolisms of that is the hand tefillin is on our hand, which has one sense, our sense of touch. The head tefillin those on the head, which has four senses, the sight, smell, taste, and hearing. And we're taking all of our senses, our entire being, binding ourselves to God and being willing to follow, to do what He wants. Following the blessings of the said before putting on the tefillin are two sections of the Torah, which are not said in the prayer service. So the four sections that are in the tefillin, two are from the Shema, talk about primarily the unity of God, and those will be said anyways later in the prayer service itself. There are two others, which many people like to say now because they're not in the actual prayer service, and those talk about the sanctity of the firstborn, of firstborn humans, firstborn animals. The idea being that when you have a firstborn, like any first, it's special, it's unique to you. It's our first dollar that I earned. It's my firstborn child. Whatever a first is, it's often special and unique to us. And we're saying we're going to take that feeling, that special, that first, and we dedicate it to God. The other idea of having the firstborn dedicated to God is that it's symbolic of the Jewish people. When Moses first goes to Pharaoh, he identifies the Jewish people as God's firstborn, God's chosen people. So any reference to the firstborn also is a reference in a larger sense to the Jewish people and the sanctity and uniqueness of the Jewish people. One of the concepts touched upon in these verses about the firstborn is that there's a sanctity both of firstborn people and a sanctity of firstborn animals, representing the fact that the people, the unique human side of us, and the animal physical body are both holy and able to do mitzvahs to serve Hashem. Some may wonder why the putting on the talis and the tefillin are mentioned in the siddur before the section of entering the synagogue, of entering the shul. There's a two-part answer to that. Number one is there's a concept of entering the shul, entering the synagogue, the sanctuary, already ready to pray, complete with wearing the clothing, the in the mindset of being ready to pray. And there are some people who, when they enter the shul and enter a synagogue, will try to put on their talis and tefillin in the foyer of the shul, and then enter the sanctuary already prepared for the prayers. The other reason for this is that technically, and especially according to the Kabbalistic sources, one should leave his home in the morning already fully prepared for prayer, wearing his talis, wearing his tefillin. And in the past, in the shtetls, that was definitely the common practice where people would get up in the morning, get dressed, put on their talis and tefillin, and leave their home already in the mindset that they're going to speak to God in the synagogue, going to have that meeting with their maker. This is not practiced as commonly nowadays, especially due to the fact that their tefillin are holy, are sanctified, and should not be worn in places of dirt and filth, and you never know what you're going to encounter when walking through the streets. But even if one is not able to wear his talis and tefillin from his home to the shul, there are those who would pause in the foyer of the shul, put on their talis and tefillin, and then enter the sanctuary already prepared to daven. And when one's about to enter the sanctuary, halacha, Jewish law, requires that you pause for a moment. It doesn't have to be long, but pause, stop, reflect what you're about to do, where you're about to go. You're entering a shul, you're entering a synagogue, you're entering the house of God. It requires a proper mindset. In fact, even once you enter, you're supposed to wait several seconds before beginning to pray. You have to realize where you are, where you're about to enter. And then upon entering, you have to adjust to the fact that you're there. You're in the shul now. You're in the house of God. Center yourself. Get into the right mindset. Realize where you are. And now you're ready to begin praying. The first prayer said as one enters the synagogue is the Matovu. It's unique. Quotation of several verses from the Torah. And the verse that it opens with was actually said by Balaam, the evil sorcerer talked about in the book of Numbers, who was out to curse the Jewish people. Now, why do you start your daily prayer service? This is the first part of the prayer that's actually said in the synagogue, by quoting an evil non-Jewish sorcerer who was out to destroy the Jews. Don't we have anyone better to quote? Something from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses? And the Talmud tells us that the truest praise, that the ones who sometimes identify our strongest points, are our enemies. From my enemies, I have become wise. Our enemies understand this best. They studied us and they know what the true source of our strength is. A more modern example of this would be in Nazi Germany, where the Germans were ready to let any, at least in the beginning, before the full outbreak of World War II, they were ready to let any Jew escape, but not what they called a Talmud letter, a Talmud teacher. Because they said, if Jews who are not Talmud teachers escape, they'll go to America and they'll slowly meld into the culture of America. And we'll have succeeded in our objective of destroying Jewish tradition. But if the Talmud letter, the Talmud teachers, the rabbis escape, they will revitalize and reinvigorate the Jews of America. And that they didn't want. They understood, maybe more clearly than we did, that that is the core of our survival. So Bilam as well understood when he was attempting to curse us, he directed his curses, or was attempting to direct his curses, at our synagogues, at our yeshivas, at our study halls. And he didn't succeed. God turned those curses into blessings, and he blessed us about how good are the tents of Yaakov and Yisrael, our study halls, how beautiful are our study halls, how beautiful are our yeshivas, how beautiful our synagogues. This is the source of our strength. He really, as they say, hit the nail on the head. The remaining verses quoted talk about the fact with the kindness of Hashem, we're able, with the kindness of God, we're able to enter his home. Not too long ago, during COVID, we were locked out of our synagogues. For the first time in Jewish history, where it was not by some foreign government trying to shut down Jewish life, but by Jewish law itself. To protect ourselves, we had to stay out of shul. We had to stay out of our synagogues. It's only through the kindness of God that we are able to come, join together to daven. We talk about our love for the shul. If shul should be a place which we feel a connection to, a place that we want to go to. That's a big factor in choosing a shul, a synagogue for yourself, is a place that you want to go to, where you feel comfortable in. And we ask that our prayer should find favor in God's eyes as we're entering the synagogue, especially to pray. We're taught about the power of communal prayer, and we say that please, with the help of the community coming together to pray, our thoughts, our feelings, our prayers should be accepted, as they are much more powerful prayers.